Hello, world, and welcome to the Innovation Coaching Podcast. My name is Klaus Wastel, and with me today, I have Göran Hilscher. Göran, tell me how I can help.
Klaus, yeah, I reached out lately to you because I was curious about whom can you recommend when it comes to strategic storytelling, right?
This is true.
Oh, somehow, I had the feeling you refer back to yourself.
A little bit. I said I might be able to assist a little bit.
Such a coincidence. I mean, I got to know you your amazing speaker skills last year on the college. So that made me, of course, ask you. Because in my, I mean, I'm now on a 20-year professional journey and 10, 15 years in a facilitation journey. What I really found is the proof of my most favorite quote by George Bernard Shaw that says, the single biggest problem of communication is the illusion that it has taken place.
I love that.
Yeah, so I love that too. And I put it almost upfront every business or every corporate workshop I'm stepping into. And people are like, yeah, that's our problem. So, and I mostly put that up front, design thinking workshops, strategic workshops, anything else. And then I found, fuck, why do I care about the problems that come always after the root problem? And so why not care about the root problem, which is communication? And as this situation where the two fish encounter each other and say hey, how's the water today? One says, which water? And the same comes with communication. So, and there's so many, I collected a lot of cases or stories where I really found, fuck, this is really the chapter where people suck, because they have no awareness about the power of words, the structure of sentences, persuasion, etc., etc. They don't play with metaphors anyhow. They became pretty, lacking playfulness as well, and joke and wittiness and all that stuff. So that led me back to the idea to focus and bundle all my efforts towards the bonfire situation, to weave back together I call it always the narrative carpet. So, and now with conversations like this, I'm trying to find out if, and we know the need is there. We just don't know if there's enough pain to tap into the need, because often you read such funny sentences or hear some things like, oh no, for communication, we don't have money. I mean, at the moment, it seems like people have no money for anything, but then something so etheric, like communication, may seem beforehand already a waste of money. So, and that's why I reached out and think okay, how a meaningful offer can look like that gives people back narration, storytelling, and not in the terms of marketing communication, but really in the term of how this is our most sophisticated bonding tool for knowledge management, wisdom exchange, for delivering the connection of older times with newer times, and even of our story to the future. Because what I see, and also found the proof in this book, I just hold it up, is the crisis of narration from my newest latest most favorite philosopher, Byung-Chul Han. It's a Korean German who writes the most short sentences for a philosopher, and he says that due to social media, and I translate it into companies, with the hyper use of all these apps and Asana and the Trello here and the Slack channel and whatsoever, that the narration is very fragmented and people have a hard time to bring this kind of patches together. So, and this is an issue I would love to take care for in the future.
So basically you're saying, Klaus, how do we together solve communications for the world in the future? Let's narrow it down a little bit. Let's start there. Tell me, because I agree, there's nothing so far I don't agree with. And thanks for the recommendation for the Korean-German philosopher. What do you need help with?
What I need help with? Maybe would love to tap into your experience, because I mean, I know you're the totally overpaid rockstar consultant. in your experience, where is the weak spots or the sweet spots to tap into to place an offer, and even for the beginning, the most minimum offer, so they can't say no to.
See, now we're talking.
Yeah, because whenever I tell the story about the pain I faced in the conversations, tell about some workshops or transformation guidances I did, everybody's just nodding and says, oh yes, the same problem we have nowadays.
Yes, and then what, right? And that's why I asked a little bit provocatively, is that you are a master of communications, right? I don't know you well, but I know you a little, and I know you're good. But even so, I didn't know what you needed, right? And where if you say, I want help in creating an offer that is a minimal viable offer that they can't say no to. Now that's clear, right? If you said, Klaus, I'd like to make more money, or Klaus, I'd like to reach the Italian audience, or Klaus, I'd like to have corporate leaders not just pay me, but actually do what I ask them to. Now, these are all like specific, here's what we want change, where a large part of trouble in communication selling, not communications, but in communication selling and in selling communications, is that it gets wrapped up in a lot of fluffy stuff. It gets wrapped up in a lot of big things that everybody agrees on, but they're not certain what to do with. And when you go to people and you tell them these things, what I've seen, and I sometimes end up doing that myself, is people say, yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's really well seen and well said, and you're very sharp. And yeah. And then you're waiting for them to say, so, Göran, how about we hire you to do something about it? And that never happens. Or maybe it happens sometimes, but it doesn't happen enough. And part of it is simply that making it so clear, not just what problem you're solving, because they can agree with the problem, but how you're doing it and how they can click the button. One of the nice things about web shops, right? You go to a web shop, you buy shoes or you buy spices or you buy a concert ticket, is that you go to the web shop and you maybe there's pictures, maybe there's text, but there's like, this is an item. And it is a defined item. It's these shoes. It's not the idea of shoes. It is these specific shoes. And then you choose, do you want them in size 39 or 43? Do you want them in white or black? And then there's a price. And then you click, I want two, and you click buy. And then it says, please pay. And where do you want them sent? And you write where you want them sent. And you click buy. And then at some point, shoes magically appear on your doorstep. But that web shop, that here's what you can buy. Here's the colors it's in. Here's the sizes it's in. Here's the price. Here's how it's delivered. And this is a shoe. That's magic. And when we come to the slightly more tricky stuff like strategy or communications or culture, then I find that some of the most successful people, they sell things like they're selling shoes. Because if you go to me and say, Klaus, I'm an expert communications guy, I'll say, you're right. And then you say, I also think that we need to get better at storytelling and we need to get better at like deeper level communication and active listening and all. And I say, yeah, you're right, Göran, you're right. Never has anybody been more right than you are. And then you're sitting there and I think, okay, what next? Where if you then say, I run a 2-hour virtual training that costs 29 euros, and after you've done it, you are a better listener and that makes you a better boss. Then I can say, I want two of them. And can I have them on a Friday? Or I'll say, no, I don't need that because I'm great at listening. Just hear me talking. I'm a middle-aged white man. Why do I need to learn about listening, right? Of course, I need to learn. But it's clear what I'm buying and it's clear how it's going to help the problem. Because let's say that I know the problem is my employees don't listen, or we spend too much time on ineffective meeting, or everybody's always, when I send the thing on the Slack channel, they're always calling me afterwards to hear what I was saying because the message was too long. These are specific problems I want to avoid. So if you're doing a workshop that's called Declutter Your Slack Channel, a 2-hour virtual workshop with Göran Hirschler, communications master, that's I want that. Or no, I don't want that. If you're saying, I'm Göran, I'm really good at communications, and I tell you that you need help, then people will usually stop at, yeah, I need help. And you're good, and then they don't know what to do. So part of it is simply making it so easy and so clear that it becomes a yes/no decision instead of it becoming a let's figure it out and explore and talk and see about needs. That's selling like a consultant, right? If you sell like a consultant, you're saying, trust me, tell me what your problems are. I'll figure out how we can solve them best together. And that works. Consultancy is a huge business. But it's a high trust business and it's high intensity, it's high energy, and it's especially high investment. Because if I go to you and say, Göran, do you want to come to my workshop on how to dance like you don't care on the 14th of April, 2025, it's going to cost you 89 euros. It's in Frankfurt. Here's the address. You can say yes or no. If I say, Göran, do you want me to teach you how to care less about what other people think? One of them is a clear yes, no. The other, you might want it, but you're like, oh, what does it mean? And how is it? And is it a coaching course, or is it a book, or is it a video, or do I need to come to the place, or will I be on a plane to Peru, or what about dogs, and will there be food, and is it even in German? And blah, 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 because you don't know. And the number one trick is make it very, 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 very clear what the offer is. That's why I love selling keynote speeches. Because somebody will contact me and say, "Hey, Klaus, we've got an event. We need a keynote speaker, and we think it might be you." I say, "Great, I love that. Tell me more." Where if I go to someone and say, "Hey, could you maybe use my help? I'm really good," they might say, "Oh, you seem really good, but what does that mean?" "Well, what do you want it to mean?" And suddenly, that only works when there is an extreme level of trust and time investment, where the other thing is very much simply yes, no. Does it make sense?
This makes a lot of sense, yeah.
And that also, if you're going to use your network to sell you, whether you're an overpaid rock star consultant or you are a world famous DJ or a communication specialist, then they should know this as well. So I'm going to ask you now a very tricky question. Gurun, what do you do?
I help people to communicate better.
Say that again. Oh.
I help people to communicate better, or even like to say to communicate really. Because what I found, I came to this conclusion because I felt often very lost in the workshops or in the consulting. So I decided to put a module up front of all of it that I call narrative analysis. And what I'm actually doing is what most or a lot of leaders miss because they don't have time for that, to speak to each team member for an hour and ask a lot of like nasty questions. So, and that like totally like gives me a landscape of their stories, of their storytelling, of their stances towards each other, like the relationships, the skills, who hates whom, who loves whom, who has a secret crush on whom, and so forth. And from there, of course, like in the best systemic way, of course, I carve hypothesis. And of course, we know it's absolutely important to grow a fine feeling. So what can be escalated now or better later or not? Because I have companies that say, yeah, because now when I'm like doing this, I have prepared everything very well. I have communicated with each participant. I built a relationship that totally like increases the engagement level, and I have no saboteurs in any workshop anymore. So because I can manage that. And I have a leader that is like utterly grateful for having a document of 50 pages of what the team is saying that he can like run his like team lead strategy for the next year with. So it's a part of the workshop product. I could maybe just like have this as a product. Because normally, like in these companies, they have this annual conversations that are pretty fiercely structured and totally like leave out the relational level. I look more, I'm rather looking in the big picture how to heal communication, heal share, than to optimize the trash in your channels. That's like a short-term remedy for me is like really like looking for a root cause. And one of the root causes, in my opinion, is that there's a lack of enough face-to-face meetings, gatherings, and bonfire circles, simply speaking. And I would love definitely to raise an awareness how important that is. And from the science of storytelling, we know there's a lot of like neurological effects, bonding effects, hormonal effects, even when people come together and communicate. And one person that tracked that even in large scale is Sandy Pentland. I don't know if you know this guy. I think like he became a little bit of a scientist that like explored to the brink of what's possible with data surveillance because he developed a sociometer, and that's a little item that can track when you communicate to whom on which channel about what topic at what time and with what kind of body language you employ. Oh, and he could even map that, like maybe in a project stream from the initiation to like selling the product and then get rebound from the customers. When there was too much of non-face-to-face or computer-mediated communication in the beginning, a lot of face-to-face communication is like necessary at the end or like post-project because there's too much rebound, customer service, and stuff. Or that we have an insane lack with like because everything gets managed by apps these days. Yeah, a lot of like. Our communication is computer mediated, but what is absolutely key and like vital for the flourishing of human communication is having this kind of accidental communication places, elevator, coffee corner, the way to your work with colleagues, and so forth. He, for instance, put together, and there's a nice connection between this and OKR. He put together, for instance, like in a call center of a bank, two shifts. One was super underperforming, the other one was overperforming. So what he did, they gave the two like an overlapping lunch break for a couple of time. And a year later, they had a 20% and 28% increase of turnaround. That's amazing.
That's pretty impressive.
This is hard to measure up front. And then I was just becoming like very attentive when I lately got like it was kind of a sermon about OKRs and the positive effects, and companies that implemented OKRs also after a year often have an increase of like one third of their turnaround. And I was like, oh, is it just like setting these goals, or like with setting the goals quarterly, having an increased rate of knowledge exchange and therefore a common story and awareness for bugs or for potentials and so forth, so that the synergy increased by the face-to-face communication initiated by OKR meetings. So, and I'd love to raise the sensitivity and to the awareness that sharpening your communicational axe on the way and not optimizing and putting it all into channels will most certainly help you to share a core story, a common story, which increases also the performance of the team, hence the productivity of your company.
So, Gern, what was the question I asked you?
Oh God, so people don't see your face now. What I'm doing. So yeah, I went from like what I'm doing, like simply speaking. So of course, like ameliorating or helping with the quality of communication. And then of course I needed a lot of explanation.
I think if somebody was in this call who is a great communicator, he's sitting in front of me and they can't see your face either, but Gern is grinning, then he would say, maybe clarity makes it easier. And part of that is, I think you need to swallow a bit of your own medicine as well. That you need to have, because you now told me about Sandy. Sandy maps out communication between people across channels and did this experiment. We need to make it easier for people to do that for you. And part of that is by putting into language and situations that they can understand and they say, ah, I need that. If I go out, I sometimes do public speaking training, for example. And if I go out and say, I'll make you a better communicator, some people will say, okay, tell me more. And others will say, why should I listen to you? If I say, I'll teach you how to be a better public speaker, then that narrows it down because it's still communication, but it's more specific communication. If I say, I'll teach you how to use your body language better while doing presentations, then we're narrowing it down even further. If I say, I'm going to teach you how to connect with an audience while you're on stage, or how to get rid of your stage fright, or how to deal with, again, the more specific it is, the more chance you have of somebody going, I want that. I found out some years ago that I was trying to figure out how to position myself, and I was doing some work in the innovation space, and I asked my network and said, hey, I'm considering the title of it being an innovation strategist. And then I had a lot of people who said, oh, that's really great and lovely and awesome. And that's just you. And people should get innovation from you. And you're really cool and wow. And that was really heartwarming, right? That was really motivating. And I got hired for a few things, but most of those things were somebody hired me for other people. I want to have you come speak to my network or speak to my team. It was never for themselves because everybody knows innovation is important, but it's always for other people. Nobody came and said, Klaus, I'm bad at innovation. I want to get better. And by the way, I'm not sure what it is. Then I said, okay, maybe this is not going well. What if I instead say, I'll help you become more productive without burnout? I called it playful productivity. And a week later, I ran a 45-person workshop because people signed up and said, I want to get better at this. It was the same stuff. It was just wrapped in a different way. Because while everybody agreed that innovation, I was good at that, which was kind of them, and they thought other people should have innovation, nobody wanted it for themselves. But when I said, I'm pretty productive, the books, the talks, the events, the blah, 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 I've got a reasonable track record, I can teach you how to be more productive while still having fun. Then a lot of people wanted it for themselves. Then they went from, oh, this is a good idea, to I want that. And I didn't change what was actually in it. It was more or less the same stuff underneath. But underneath the hood, while the car was the same, it definitely had a different color. And that color, it mattered a lot.
Yeah.
And I think some of what you're up against is that you know too much and you're too good. because it means you want to solve problems. Even the fact that you speak about root causes. Most people are not interested in solving root causes, if we're honest. We're interested in solving today's problems. I want dinner tonight. And if you say the reason, Klaus, that you're worried about dinner tonight is about your relationship to food and your relationship to cooking and your fear of not being as good as your girlfriend at cooking and of making food that your daughter won't like, and that's rooted in a deep insecurity that comes from your old childhood when your stepfather was a better cook than your mother, and you're thinking the modern man can cook, blah, blah, blah. And it's all true.
It's too much.
But if you say that, I'm going to say, could you please just let me order a number 16 pizza with extra cheese and send it over now? Like, imagine going into a pizzeria and you're trying to order a number 16 and maybe a 32, but you're also adventurous. And the pizza guy says, have you tried the one with Parma ham? We do that really well. Then you might say, okay, I'll try that. That sounds good. But if he says, Gran, what does this meal mean to you? Why are you even, what is food even? What is human nature? Then you're probably pretty quick going to go, can you give me the number 16 with extra cheese or not? If not, I'll find a different pizzeria and say, no. I want to talk about the root cause of why you're even in this pizzeria, girl. Then you're gone. Where if he just says, great, how much extra cheese do you want? 45 grams or 55? And you don't know the difference, but you think 55 sounds like more. And I'm not saying there's not a time for the deep conversations, but I'm saying that if you're trying to solve immediate problems with deep conversations and deep root problem solving, you're going to reach the wrong people. Just like if somebody comes in and says, I'm feeling suicidal. I have everything in my life I need. I'm happily married. I've got a great job. My kids are great. And I still feel something's missing. And I'm considering walking off a bridge. I think we should talk. And then the guy says, so do you want extra cheese on that pizza or what? That's also the wrong solution. But figuring out who are you serving? If you go out and say, I'm Gurlin Hirschlin, I solve deep root communications problems. And I do that by 6 month intensive training programs where I shadow and coach you and your team. And when you come out of it on the other side, you will see massive increases in trust and in communications efficiency and in just general well-being and in kind of better work days. That's a very different thing from saying, I run 2-hour workshops where I teach people how to write less crap on Slack. But both of them are very good. Both of them have their place. And both of them are clear. And if you're saying, I help people with communication, then they don't know if it's one or the other or somewhere in between. So I'm saying take some of that smart brain of yours and all that massive experience and choose one way to apply it or a couple of ways to apply it, even knowing you could do more. Make the menu and make the menu short, because a menu that has many different items is basically like saying, we're a restaurant, we have food. Okay. Never ask the chef, what can you do? Say, can I have the steak? And if you don't, if it says steak restaurant, then there's a pretty good chance they're going to sell steak. Resonate?
100%, 100%. No, I see that paired with a need for explanation, and people don't want this explanation. And I know, like, they're afraid of root causes. So, I have some very sweet takeaways to, like, use a different gift paper.
A different gift paper, right? Exactly that. A different gift paper. And I think on that different gift paper, that I think we generally, whenever we're buying, we want the hyper specific. We don't just want a bike. We want that bike in that size and that color with that amount of gears and that brakes and that lighting. And we want that service deal and we want it delivered to this home on this date at this hour. Oh, and by the way, is the price reasonable? Could we maybe fix that? But when we're selling, even saying, could you just say you sell bikes? Yeah, but we also sell vehicles and mobility and transportation and repairs and life, right? Getting people to slim down what they're selling is very, very hard. It's why my website says two things. It says the first line on that website is, are you looking for an overpaid consultant, overpaid rock star consultant, of course, to speak at your next event or to hold a keynote speak at your next event on either innovation culture or experience design. Does it mean I do other stuff? Of course I do other stuff. I even speak about other stuff. I can do an event. I can plan your wedding. I can even cook a decent meal if needed. But if I try to tell them all the things I can do, they're going to have no idea what it is I do. And even with that very specific, I know that people don't hire me necessarily because of my deep expertise in innovation culture, which is pretty nice. They hire me because they want to put the guy in the Batman suit on their stage and rock things a little bit. They hire me not because of what I know, but because of who I am. And then, lucky enough for them, I actually know some stuff as well. And that's pretty specific. Where if I said, I'm Klaus, I'm an experienced designer, well, that would be true. But people would say, what is that? How do I work with you? What are we looking for? I say, oh, but I design experiences. Okay, great. Let's get back to the stuff where people actually told us. Let me have that number 16.
Yeah, I saw that suit. Yeah, it was a very fair way to boil it down. So because I see like, okay, my mind wants to like display everything, and I know I overwhelm people with the things I know, and I just want to like, like just the, it's like a very like, it's a little bit oxymoronic, yeah, because you want to display expertise, but you show it by totally limiting it down.
Yes. And here, an old friend of mine who I sometimes quote on this, Esk Aga, told me many years ago, he was doing a presentation to somebody, and I was just randomly there. And he said that, objectively speaking, if you have two people and one of them has three skills at level 10 out of 10, whatever that may be, and one of them has the same three skills at level 10 out of 10, and one extra at level 2 out of 10, then objectively speaking, person B knows more, right? They have three tens and one two. But when we're thinking about people, we'll think person A has an average of 10 and the other has an average of 8. Where if you do one thing only, right? You fix Stradivarius violins with broken strings, and that's it. Then most people will say, okay, pretty wild he can make a living off doing that. But if somebody who doesn't already have a violin fixer who comes to you and says, what do you do? Well, I figured like, you're sent from heaven. Or if you say, I fix musical instruments, okay, that's still pretty good. But if you're saying, I fix things, it's like, okay, you're not getting your hands on my violin. And that's easy to forget when you're selling, but we all remember when we're buying.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, because it's like a little bit like the like inverted iceberg principle,
Yes, exactly. And of course, you have the depth. And once you get to a closer relationship, that's different, right? Let's say you do something for somebody. I'm sure you work with a lot of people. Then there's trust. Then there's knowledge. Then you can say, they can say, oh, that was really great, Gern. Could you also come help us with our strategy? Or say, yeah, of course. How do you want help? Well, could you run a strategy workshop? Yeah, I can do that. Or you can say, here are three ways I can help, and say, oh, number two sounds really good. We'd like that strategy workshop. But if you start by saying, I can do anything, then you're usually going to end up doing nothing because that's a much harder conversation, which is why I love the coaching format, because there I get to just say, how can I help? And then it's the other person's problem to define it. But that also means that it's very hard to even be allowed to coach somebody, even for free, if there's not trust. You don't sell a lot of, selling shoes doesn't require a lot of trust. Coaching people. Right? You're trusting me with your time. You're trusting me with your attention. You don't have to listen, but you're at least trusting me with kind of time and energy. And we're now even letting the world know. That's a high level of trust. And thank you for that. But that's not nothing. And if you're going to people and saying, just tell me what I should fix, you're requiring an insane level of trust for them. Where if you're coming to them and saying, do you want the number 16 with cheese or without? It doesn't require a lot of trust. Because it's clear what they can say, and it's a yes/no decision.
Yeah, it's a good pizza for thought.
Pizza for thought. Now, Gert, we're going to keep this a little bit short today because we both have to run off to other things, and I think we've beaten around the bush on this in a nice way. But I also thank you for taking us down this road. I want to first thank you for coming to me with this. Thank you for that. It takes courage to bring things to anyone. It takes even more courage to bring them on the air. So thank you for that. You're definitely going to inspire some people out there who are saying, ah, yeah, I hear what he's saying. I'm doing the same. Or, wow, I'm not doing that. Both are good. So that's the first thing. Thank you for that. The second is I want you to think a moment and then share three takeaways from our conversation today.
The one that struck me the most, of course, like eat a bit more of your own medicine. And that's even like the critique I have, like, of course, like outwardly, like to everyone that maybe runs experience designs, that does a kind of keynote or anything. But it's I think the smartest advice. Then I think like everything around the liver with the trust to see like what it needs. Like, you know, like one key. Give them one key before you they give you the entire bundle, like to their castle. That's a big one. And I think with what I want, really rethink like to build entry offers than to sell programs, to have them like, you know, in my sleeve. Because this is definitely what I prefer to do, because this kind of like treatment needs a bit of a longer time, but can have an impact in the short form, and definitely. Yeah, and I have to thank you as well. I mean, the trust was up front. We already met in real life and have this great conversations, and you inspire me a lot. And yeah, I hope like we can also give something to the audience with that.
We've done our best, right? And thank you for those men. Also, thank you to our listeners out there. We don't know how many of you there are, but every one of you counts. Thank you for that. This has been the Innovation Coaching Podcast. You've heard Göran Hilscher and me, your host, Klaus Wastel. Thank you for listening.